Welcome to Funding and Disrupting, the most in-depth business podcast for companies looking to raise money and the investors who fund them. Every episode, we interview a funded founder, plus the investor who funded them, to get the real story of how it all came together. If you're searching for funding for a disruptive technology or business, or you're searching for the best companies to invest in, then you've come to the right place. This episode of Funding and Disrupting is brought to you by Aura Collective, a leading tech PR and marketing firm. Let's get funding and disrupting.
Hello, everyone. I'm your host, Keith Herman, and welcome to today's episode of Funding and Disrupting. Today, my guest is Sharton Riss, the founder of Concentric. Concentric is a venture capital firm based in London with a particular focus on seed plus through B rounds. They back companies solving real problems using software to enhance efficiency and automation. Concentric is also a community of like-minded hands-on investors and business builders, helping early stage European businesses. Sharton is an established investor, advisor, and board member. Notably, he's also a contributing writer for several prominent publications, such as Forbes, writing about the rapidly evolving VC and startup sector in Europe. So having said that, let's welcome Sharton to the show. How are you, sir?
Very good. How are you doing?
Doing well. I have to say that you have a very unique name. It's not, certainly for being in the States, I'm not sure. Is it a common name in Europe?
No, it's not. It's a very old name originating from the island of Iceland. And I have no connections to Iceland. So I don't know why my parents gave me this name. They probably didn't think that I would operate in an international environment. But so be it. It is what it is.
Well, I'm curious. The name actually means seed warrior. And so I'm curious, what was it like growing up with such a different name?
I grew up in Norway, and in Norway, they can actually pronounce it. So that was fine. But in my teenage years, I moved to the UK and went to school and studied in the UK. And they didn't have a chance, basically, pronouncing my name. And after 24 hours in the UK, they renamed me Charlie. So all my friends in the UK, they know me as Charlie. So that perhaps says more about the linguistic skills of the Brits rather than my name.
Do you think in your early childhood you were treated any differently than people with more common names?
I don't think so, but it is quite a tongue twister, my name. I've heard all versions. It's been murdered in so many different ways over the years. But you learn to live with it and you grow fond of it as well. So I'll stick with my name.
Do you think it's played a role in you becoming a leader? It is Sea Warrior.
Yeah, in terms of being a sea warrior, I mean, I like to travel. I like to conquer. I like to get familiar with new cultures and new environments. Transmitting that into venture capital, I like to get familiar with new entrepreneurs in all shapes and sizes. I like to get familiar with new ways of solving real problems and problems that we have in the world. And I feel privileged to be able to basically work with the smartest people around the world and perhaps help them a little on their way to solving these big problems.
That's interesting. So let's now talk about your path to Concentric. Please tell us briefly about your career and how it led you to launch Concentric.
Yeah, so I, in the late 90s, 1999-2000, I co-founded a fund called DN Capital, very successful pan-European, or now also US-based fund. So I was part of the founding team there, learned the ropes from some very experienced venture capitalists as a junior member of the team. And that sort of probably formed my way of thinking and the way of doing investments. They were Americans, so they brought this American skill set to the European landscape. So the more hands-on type investment, working with entrepreneurs, sort of going under the hood in terms of exploring, not just being superficial and participating in board meetings. So then I set up a investment fund or merchant bank where we had family-backed investing into tech companies from the balance sheet. And then I partnered up with my now business partner, Dennis Shafranik, in 2014. We joined forces to do investments together. We started attracting some great deal flow and started doing deals. A lot of co-investors came forward and wants to co-invest with us and participate in syndicates. We then said, okay, in order to do this in a more structured and more professional manner, we need to have a fund structure around this. So the fund was set up in 2016 and with a final close in 18. And that is the Concentric One that is now fully invested. And we are starting to harvest that now.
You're located in one of the financial capitals of the world. With that in mind, what do you feel makes Concentric unique, considering how crowded it is in the European venture capital arena?
I will argue against the fact that it is crowded. We have a lot of entrepreneurs, an increasing number of entrepreneurs, both from the fact that entrepreneurship is becoming a more accepted profession in Europe, also from the fact that you have serial entrepreneurs have always started companies that are now starting the second or third wave of companies. And thirdly, these same serial entrepreneurs, they are also passing on knowledge and capital to the first wave or the ones that are starting companies for the first time. In Europe, compared to the US, there is a short history of venture capital. The US is probably 50 years ahead of Europe in that respect. They're also much further advanced in terms of the type of investors or LPs that are backing venture funds. So in the US, you have endowments, family offices, corporates, banks, insurance companies, pension funds backing venture funds. And this has been the case for a long, long time. In Europe, that is not the case. Pension funds are just dipping a toe in the water. We don't have the endowments as you have in the US. We don't have, and the family offices have just recently entered the stage. We do, however, have a large state backing of venture capital, but they have a different sort of agenda or somewhat different agenda than the LPs in the US. So all this means that venture is a very nascent industry in Europe, and hence, there's still room for a number of venture funds in Europe in order to capitalize on the talent we have already have in Europe that is now distributed across the European landscape. They are in Romania, in Estonia, that we will probably discuss later, and the normal hubs like Stockholm, Paris, Berlin, and London. So where we set ourselves apart, I think, is the fact that we take this activist venture mindset. The easy part is to put in money into these companies, but the hard part is to actually take it out with certain multiple. And hence, we feel that you cannot be an early stage venture investor and be passive. You need to have the active, hands-on collaboration mindset. So hence, when we invest, we go in and we offer companies not only capital, but all the value add, skills, networks, and experience that we can actually add to these companies. And that is through go-to-market, that is business development, that is additional funding routes, that is corporate governance, reporting. So all these things that we have accumulated over the years and we can reuse on the best practice in these companies. So that is the mindset that I think will set us apart versus our peers. We're also very, our DNA is very much international. We travel well. We can easily lead a deal in Germany, as in the Nordics, as in the UK. And also the third thing is that we are very large investors ourselves into the funds. So we definitely have skin in the game. So those are maybe three factors that maybe set us slightly apart from our peers.
Tell us more about Concentric, more specifically, how many investments you've made, how often you lead rounds, typical check sizes, that type of information.
Yeah, so Fund 1, 22 investments across Europe, so the belt from the Baltics through Germany, Nordics to the UK. Out of 22 companies, we have led 16 of those, and leading them is not only making sure that you put the syndicate together, you set the terms, but it's also it comes with a sort of certain amount of responsibility when you take these companies past or through the gating points and try to make sure that they grow and mature as a company. So we are making sure that the door is always open for entrepreneurs to discuss problems, challenges, positive and negative, and also making sure that we add value where they need assistance. We need to provide this differentiated approach because none of these entrepreneurs are the same. Some of them are very good on the commercial side. Some of them are very good at the product side. Some of them are good at fundraising. So we need to cater for the particular entrepreneur when we go in and support these companies. In terms of stage, you said it in your intro, but we are post-seed investors. That comes with the fact that we are not good pre-product investors, or we are not good investors when it comes to when there's no proven product market fit. We help with mostly commercial structural aspects in these companies, and hence post seed through Series A, Series B, that's where we deploy capital. Check size 500,000 to 5 million euros, and we always like to partner up with other like-minded investors, whether they are European or from outside of Europe, and with a view to building sort of next generation of the market leaders.
Terrific. Now, let's talk about one of your most recent investments. The company's called Inslee. Now, Chardon, I'd like you to be upfront with us on this next question. In fact, all the questions, but especially the next one. I spoke with Risto Rasar, the founder of Inslee, last week, and he was extremely reticent about coming on the show. So I'm wondering, is there some sort of bad blood between the two of you? So now would really be the time to kind of clear the air, maybe a preemptive strike. But, you know, it's your call. But what's going on there?
Yeah, so Risto and I, we built up a great friendship. Maybe you think I'm pushing him a bit too much from time to time, but Risto is a fantastic entrepreneur, one of our favorite entrepreneurs in our portfolio. His origin is from Estonia, and for the listeners who do not know, Estonia is previously part of the old Soviet Union. It's on the Baltic coast. It's a small country with 1.2 million people. The people there are probably more like the Finns than the Russians. So hence, they are slightly sort of introverted. They have a great sense of humor, but it takes a while before you get there. And they probably form by the long winters and the fact that is a very barren country. It's completely flat, etc. But great entrepreneurs. There's been some great companies that has been produced out of Estonia. It is probably the first country in the world that is entirely digital. So everything you do is digital. And they're also famous for that. You can get this e-passport in Estonia. And so great place to build companies. But for a jolly night out or for a weekend with your friends, it's probably not the place you travel to have fun.
So tell us about Inslee. What do they do? And you know, then we can talk about how you actually met Risto.
Yeah. Maybe I should just one step back. So they operate in the sort of insurance industry or insurtech. Insurance industry has been laggards in terms of adopting technology. It's been an industry with lack of transparency, with huge margins, and hence there probably hasn't been that desire to change and that urgency to deploy technology because they were doing well. A lot of the insurance industry is paper-based, is manual, a lot of legacy systems that hasn't been updated. So they're running on mainframes or they're running on like on-prem type software. But this is a huge market. Is ripe for digitalization, and we can see the wave is coming. Inslee has built or is continuing to build a workflow system for the insurance industry. They sell to insurance brokers, MGAs, which is like an insurance broker that can also issue insurances, and they've also started selling to insurance companies. So what does Inslee do? So this interface, if you were an insurance broker, you log in the morning and everything you do is interfacing with this workflow system that is provided by instantly. That is with document management, there's underwriting records, it's policy administration, they manage the claims, they manage the renewals, so there's an integrated CRM system. And they also do like accounting, reporting, etc. And you can even get sort of business intelligence reports. So it is the sort of hub for an insurance professional, and it is cloud-based, and it's subscription-based. So it's much more flexible and next-generation insurance software rather than having this old clunky system that most insurance companies have today.
How is it that the two of you met?
Yeah, so Risto, his background is that he has been in the insurance industry for a long time, and he's one of the visionary guys who could see that insurance was meeting merging with digital. So he's a serial entrepreneur. He actually set up, they claim, the first digital insurance broker in the world that he exited to one of the large insurance companies. He was raising money for Inslee. They got referred to us by one of our advisors, and he then started taking us through the problems the insurance industry has, the opportunity for new software solutions, and not least, the opportunity for more nimble software solutions that is cloud-based. We had a relatively long process getting to know each other. We got to know Risto as a hugely ambitious and professional entrepreneur, built up a good relationship, did a lot of due diligence. It was the first transaction we did in the insurance space. We were sort of doing a lot of background work and learning. And also what sort of gave us the positive aspect was that Risto himself had invested a huge amount of money into the business. So that is always a stamp of approval from our side when, if you believe so much in the business that you put your own money into it and significant money into it. And then following that, early 2018, we have now done a couple of additional top-up investments into the company, and the company is doing really well.
What was the first meeting like? How did you meet? You said that you were introduced through an advisor, but did you physically meet? Was it over a Zoom call, Skype? What was that like?
He was in London and came to our office in London. So it was a typical pre-COVID first time meeting with an entrepreneur, where we end up giving a 2-minute introduction, and then the entrepreneur takes us through his business and his plans, etc. And yes, we knew it was a huge opportunity in the insurance sector. We knew we were going to do something in the insurtech sector, and he just happened to be the most compelling case that came through the door after having looked at probably 50 other companies in the insurtech area before we invested into Inslee.
How long of a process was it until you felt that you really kind of got your hands around what it is he actually had, that you really said, yeah, this is, you know, you said you looked at a lot of projects. So how long did it take you to really kind of figure out and get to a point where you said, yeah, this is something that we really want to move on?
I think from the first meeting until we actually signed and made the investment, probably 4 months. Because him being based in Tallinn, we went over to Tallinn a couple of times. Tallinn is the capital of Estonia. And then he came to London. So there were probably 4 or 5 in-person meetings, and then multiple calls and exchanges of information. We also did a very comprehensive due diligence in terms of the product, in terms of the market, in terms of the technology. We actually did a technology due diligence, hired someone to do it for us, and then it is sort of the customary financial and legal DD as well. But during this process, we learned a lot, and we could also see the vision that Risto had for the insurance sector, both in terms of the markets he was going for and the product he was continuously developing. And Inslee is a company now with 85, 90 employees, and they have like 60, 65 techies. It's a very product and tech-focused company that has a great future ahead of it.
Let's get down a little bit more in depth about the process. You said that it took about 4 months, and you obviously had some meetings, you got comfortable. Just walk us through kind of that 4 months and talk to us about how you have those conversations. Then at some point you said, okay, we really want to move forward on this and let's start the due diligence process. Like, walk us through how long that due diligence process was. What type of information did you really require? At what point did you say we're going to issue a term sheet? That kind of information.
Yeah, what we do is obviously we get comfortable on the business and the person that we find it compelling enough to move ahead. And then the product and market, that is key. Understanding where they sit in the market and the competition they have and then the product they have developed in order to address that market, and also the pipeline of new products they are developing, because they are evolving all the time. And I think when we got comfortable on that, we issued a term sheet and we continued to speak to market players as we were building up our file and our information memorandum, internal memorandum. And then we finished off with legal and financial, just to make sure that the docs are in order. And that's more tick the box process. And the companies are actually incorporated and the people are actually who they are, etc. So it's more sort of the fiduciary duty we have in order to tick the boxes. And then basically we also brought on board a couple of other investors into the syndicate. And so that was in 2018.
What would you say the biggest challenge was in this whole process?
It's getting our head around the product and where it sits in the insurance market. Obviously, being a huge sector, there are quite a few companies addressing this. But what they have done really well is to build a product that is very little friction, it's seamless. You can connect all the APIs into the platform. And they had this ambition, and the ambition there has come true now in terms of building a no-code product. So almost like a drag and drop type product. So you don't need IT personnel to do the implementation. That was what we were very enthused about. And also on the markets they were going for. I mean, they can target anyone from their single broker up to the large insurance company. They're not limited by a particular size or a particular profile. If you are an insurance professional selling or issuing or running insurances, you are a target customer for Instly.
Now, you had mentioned that it took you a while to wrap your head around everything. What type of advice would you give to tech founders in terms of presenting their project? Because obviously, it's not just I can give you a one-liner necessarily, and you may get the concept, but there's a lot more to it. So, what kind of advice would you give to an entrepreneur that maybe comes to you with their project in terms of how to best present it for you to grasp it as quickly as possible?
Yeah. So we have, first of all, it's never been a better time to start a company because of all the challenges and the problems we have in the world, combined with the maturing technologies that could be utilized and combined to address these problems. So that is tick the box. We probably have a job in terms of explaining the daily job of a venture capitalist is still quite a convoluted business. But we are as a firm is a really small team. We get inundated with opportunities and business plans and new deal flow. So there needs to be something that triggers our attention, either the way the people are, or the message they put across to us, or the problem they are addressing. So we need to sort of, it needs to grab our attention. We look through everything that comes through the door, but it's fair to say we have made mistakes. We have turned down people who we shouldn't turn down, and hopefully it's not so much the other way around. But we have the advice to entrepreneurs, try to build a relationship, try to communicate in a succinct manner, trying to sort of frame the problem you're solving, how you're trying to solve it. And we don't need Bibles or slide decks with 100 slides. Sometimes it's much better to receive an email once a month with 3 bullet points with an update, because then we feel like we are in a flow. I mean, fundraising, and we know it ourselves because we raise funding from investors. So we know what it's like fundraising. And it is not a science. So it's what is right for one person or one company is not right for another company. So fundraising is an art. So you need to work as an entrepreneur to perfect that and also create your own style, your own way of communication. And not every venture capitalist is going to be for you. You need to sort of do your due diligence on the venture capital firms, whom have a particular interest, whom has a personality that you can get on with, who has been out saying they are targeting companies in those sectors and those stage. So there is some entrepreneurs, unfortunately, they are somewhat lazy. They haven't done their homework. But on the flip side, many entrepreneurs do. And there are some of these entrepreneurs who are just amazing fundraisers, and they do well whatever company they set up, really.
What information would you like to share for, you know, those that may be interested in investing, you know, in Concentric or, you know, as a co-investor?
I mean, I'm obviously happy to supply any information. The venture capital community is a very small community. It's a very collegial community. We help each other. And in terms of syndication deals, I mean, we are always open for having discussions with investors who have taken a liking to one or more of our portfolio companies. On the LP side, we operate in a market that is booming. Europe is coming of age. We have a great team in place that can address that. And we have the sort of tentacles out to get hold of the right deals and top quality deals. So also happy to speak to investors and LPs who are looking to get exposure to the European landscape. We are very active in terms of thought leadership, in terms of social media. We have a very informative homepage. So there's a lot of information out there they can get up to speed on. But always open to have discussions. That is my job. So it's just make the approach of it and why you want to speak.
And how many people get a hold of you?
LinkedIn is probably the best.
Terrific. Well, thank you so much for sharing your time and your experience with us today. You're doing great work at Concentric, and we wish you the best on your projects. That's it for today's interview. If you're a VC firm or a tech company founder and you'd like to expand your funding and partnership network, then please visit us at Orico.com, where you may learn more about Aura Collective's PR marketing services and complete the podcast application to appear on the show.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of Funding and Disrupting. Don't forget to visit our sponsor, AuraCo.com, to learn more about working directly with Aura Collective's exclusive technology PR team. They'll help you craft your message, get noticed in the press, and help you get your venture to the funding finish line. Again, you can visit them at www.auraco.com. Keep funding and keep disrupting.